Hello and welcome back to another An Abundance of Not for the week of March 9th. Yeah, it's been a while. Sue me.
Hashtag deal with it.
Garrett here, joined by Wade and Brad.
Hello.
Hello.
What the fuck is going on?
Dude.
We don't know. That's why we haven't been here.
Yeah. Too much has been going on.
Too much has been going on. We have been plagued by work schedules and illnesses and sometimes the general case of fuck it. But we won't talk about that. Let's see. In the personal world here, but before we get to that, how's everybody doing tonight?
I'm doing much better.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing what some good prescription drugs will do for you when you're not feeling good.
So you rated the prescription cabinet of the hospital you've been working on?
Hi, I'm here to raid your pharmacy.
No, I did not.
Yeah, thanks.
Propofol, there we go.
Yeah.
It's amazing what non-prescription drugs do for you, am I right? Eh? Eh?
That's true.
No?
If you know what I mean.
All right, then.
I'll tell you what's amazing is what alcohol will do for you. Just saying.
Some good stuff.
It is some good stuff. I recently picked up another bottle of my preferred casual drinking tequila. Far from my preferred... what's a word for not casual drinking?
Your special event tequila.
Yeah, I couldn't afford my special event tequila. I mean, special events can still be like
serious.
Fridays. But, I don't have the good stuff. But I'm okay. I got the interim, and I'll survive. Brad, you got to be back home. You finally had yourself some Jack Daniel's honey. With a honey Jack. Isn't that your preferred?
Jack Daniel's honey from your honey?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. It is my preferred.
That is definitely the preferred. Hi, Brad's wife. This has gotten really weird and questionably awkward. Thanks, Wade.
You're welcome.
Opening up that fucking door. Jesus. I think we're going to go ahead and move on, maybe. I don't know. Sure. So, personal stuff. Let's see. Two weekends ago.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Let's just skip the whole how's everybody doing, because I don't really fucking care. A couple weeks ago, we had gone to, actually, it's the last weekend of February. That's how long it's been. There was the local, I don't know if you want to call it, what do you want to call that, Wade? Traveling show? That's probably the most accurate.
Was it a traveling? I think it probably as much as was a traveling circus, but all right.
With traveling show going on. It is the Odissio Cavalia show, which is, I wanted to say it's like Cirque du Soleil, but it's far less acrobatics, and this one is focused mainly on horses. They had something.
Did you
like
it?
I did like it. It was entertaining. I don't think it was worth the price, and we did not spend the upward cost for the good seats. We, above average, but not top of the line.
Sure.
And I wish there was more narrative. It was just all they did. I won't say all they did, but it was independent acts that nothing tied together, aside that there were horses in pretty much all of them, and that was about it. So that was kind of a downer. I thought there was going to be more story, more narrative to kind of hold on to and be able to interpret. So I was kind of bummed out by that. But what they're able to build a relationship and get these horses to do, it was amazing. So,
what some people did with the horses was amazing.
Yes.
Whoa. In case if any of you are wondering what I'm talking about, I did put the link to the circuses, the shows, site in the show notes so you can go see for yourself. I know it's not as good as actually being there, but at least you get an idea.
Yeah. See if it's your kind of thing.
Yep. So they were originally only going for about 2/3 of February. They ended up going for all of the month of February. And then while we were there, they announced they extended their shows all the way pretty much through March. So apparently they've been getting a pretty good turnout. And people are kind of coming out and rushing. I don't want to say rushing out, but there's enough of a demand to keep them here for an extra month beyond the original schedule. So that's kind of cool for them. This was kind of a belated present for Wade and my daughter. And I think it was worth it in that regard. Again, awesome. I would have liked to see the prices a little bit less for what you got. I mean, I've spent less on Broadway shows than I paid for these tickets. But, you know, it is what it is. It's kind of a novelty to it. So.
Blacksmithing tools.
They had a pretty strong, was interesting to me a little bit. It's not really interesting, but the fact that they're really strong in enforcing it, they have a very, very strong clause of no video or photography during the show. Now, I'm sure part of that is for copyright and, you know, purposes to keep the show theirs. And I would imagine that any sort of flash photography might disrupt the horses, too. So, but they, if they saw somebody on their phone, they were shining lights in that person's face. They were telling them to shut it off. I mean, they didn't really mess around. If they saw it, they put an end to it.
I think there also might be a thing of, like, the tricks of, like, you know, how they train their horses, and they don't really want probably people stealing their tricks.
You're not going to learn anything on how they get to train something like that.
You'd be surprised.
You see the finished product, knowing the training system, you're not going to get from one show.
Okay, but they don't want it on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. They definitely want some proprietary factor to it, which I obviously acknowledge. And I was glad that they... It wasn't just a signpost saying, hey, no videoing. Like, they actually had people kind of walking around and keeping an eye on the crowd to make sure that it was held accountable. So that was cool to me.
Yeah, it was very nice. They could have had a couple more ushers, I think, because there was one lady or two that were...
I'm sure there were, like, people getting away with it. Yep.
After a minute or two, like, they still had their thing out. It's like, put it away!
Mm-hmm.
Remember it for actually being here, not remember it through your phone.
The number of times you've heard that.
That's on a daily basis. Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, that was fun. Let's see. What else have we done the past month or so, Wade? Did I talk about going out to the river?
No, I don't think you did.
Okay. So I built a cupboard and was out at the river about a month ago now, a little less. So that was good. Temperature out there was nice. Water is still too cold to do anything with. But while at the river, I saw Deadpool for the second time. And there was a three-year-old in the theater. So that was, you know, interesting. Now, I'm kind of in mixed feelings. The parents stayed there for the entire movie. So on one hand, they paid for tickets and they made sure to not, like, complain about, oh, this is inappropriate. But at the same time, they forced their kid to sit there for 2 hours of a rated R movie that was only 3 years old. So, I mean,
this movie is not meant for kids.
It's not even meant. I mean, it's barely meant for adults.
Really?
I mean, no spoilers for Brad, obviously. But I don't know. It's one of those things. I don't know what you guys think or how you guys would feel about. You know, from the business side, it's a good thing they didn't leave and try to get their money back for the tickets. But from a morality parent side, what the fuck are you thinking?
What did we say last show? I know it was a while back, but do not take your kid to see Deadpool.
I mean, you're a parent. It's your call, and you want to fuck up your kid. Exactly. That's your problem. I mean, enjoy. But
It's interesting, though, what we will give an R rating to and what we will be okay with as a PG-13. You know, some of the PG-13s have made me question.
That's true. You know, I saw rated R movies at you know, give or take my daughter's age. Maybe a couple years older. But, you know, I remember seeing Aliens at a pretty young age. And I'm pretty sure that stuff was rated R with the stuff going on there. But I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't take my daughter to see Deadpool. And more because there is a very strong sex scene and a lot of the language. The gore... I don't care if she sees. She can be kind of morbid as it is. She'll watch a show and somebody will clearly die in the show and she'll look at me and go, well, he's dead. And it's like, what? So I mean, that part, not a big deal, but the language and the sex scene was definitely more than she needs to see right now.
So let me play devil's advocate for just a second here.
No. The devil went down to Georgia. He's not here. Wait, you're in Georgia. Fuck!
Guess where I am.
Doesn't work. Anyway. Damn it!
So he literally can play devil's advocate because he's there.
Speaking of...
He's got a direct line.
It's interesting where we as society have chosen to draw that line, though. Okay? Because just the very argument that you used, and I'm not advocating that you should take your kids to see this movie, but just where we've drawn that line. And the movie that I was referring to was actually one of the Wolverine movies, mm-hmm. which started out extremely gory.
That was the Wolverine movie. No, it was the second one when he goes to Japan. Yeah, yes. You said that you had the kids with you and you guys left.
We left. That's rated PG-13.
Yeah.
But we consider violence to be acceptable as a society. It can have bombs, it can have guns, it can have swords, it can have knives. Oh, yeah. You know, maybe you should be a little careful, but that's cool. Meanwhile, if you put sex in it, which by all definitions is a natural biological function.
Sure.
All of a sudden we get queasy.
Well,
kill as many people as you want to. But having any kind of physical pleasure is a bad thing. We shouldn't show the kids that.
I think here's what I mean, you saying that made me think of this. I think it's harder to teach respect on the sexual front than it is to teach respect on firearms and weapons and whatnot. I think it's easier to teach that, you know, there is either a time or a place, or there's not ever a time and a place, depending on, you know, where you live and your local laws, for handling and using a firearm or a knife or a weapon in that regard. I have my daughter in martial arts. She deals with a lot of that. And there's a lot of education there. I think it's harder to teach respect for sex. And I think if you plaster it on the wall, so to speak, I think it's harder to kind of get that out of your mind at a younger age.
Or it's a talking point of when it's acceptable and appropriate.
Yeah, but I mean, with fire, with weapons, you can go and you can practice and you can, you know, do it in a safe, respectable manner. You can't exactly do that with sex. You can't take your kid out and go, okay, we're going to go have sex in a respectful manner. You know, like you can't do that. Obvious. I mean, you could, and there's a lot of legal ramifications for that, and that's really weird.
But it does give you the talking points of, you know, this was bad because, or this was good because it was, you know, two consenting adults that were having fun.
Okay, that's true. However, the sex scene in Deadpool is not suitable for somebody under the age of, I will say 14, I think maybe 14 is pushing that sex scene.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
For the sake of spoiler alert, a strap-on is involved.
Okay.
That's pretty forward for even some adults. So,
speaking of which, Women's Day was actually yesterday at the time of this recording.
That's funny.
Segways for the win.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Have
that's
fun
a
with
cool
that.
Segue reference.
Okay, but,
very good.
But again, you know, it's a talking point.
It's a talking point, but
consenting adults.
You can talk all you want. Doesn't necessarily mean it sinks in.
Do you know what my teacher did back in intermediate school? She actually
pulled out
a condom. I don't
want to know what
condom.
Your teacher did to you in middle
she
school.
She pulled out a condom to show the class.
Okay, but at middle school, you're 13 and 14 years old. I think almost at that point in time, if you haven't seen a condom, there's something
wrong.
But
thanks.
Well, you know. You know which way to put it on, right? You know, trampoline, you got to throw it in the trash.
Yeah, I got that. Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. Brad, you don't know this because you're married and, you know, it's not a factor. But... Sorry, Brad's wife. So that's what happened on my front. I turned the microphone over to either one who wants to step to the podium.
So it's
nobody.
Been,
great.
moving on. You know, it's been an interesting few weeks. Unfortunately, I caught myself a sinus infection. So that has dominated a lot of time. That, and as you alluded to earlier, the March Madness at work.
Yeah, you want to go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so it's every company does it. So, you know, those of you that are in the business world will know what I'm referring to, but our fiscal year runs April 1st to March 31st. So March is our year end, and so we have March Madness where we're trying to push that last little bit to meet our year-end sales goals. Those of us that actually have any kind of influence in that.
Speaking of, have you heard any numbers on that and where we sit?
I have.
Okay. That's all you need to say. That's fine.
That's all I can say about that right now.
You've
yes,
gotten
I
more
have.
Than me. That's all.
Good things come to the... Well, I don't know if I call
shut
it...
Shut up.
Things come to those who ask.
There you go.
We did go see a movie this last weekend, though.
Oh.
We went and saw Zootopia. So we can
what
get into that.
In,
we can get into that in movies.
Yes.
And it is Second Christmas Time, otherwise known as Tax Refund.
I still got to do my taxes. God damn it.
Same here.
Ours are done, filed, and returned.
I need to do my tax return. Oh, God. I have no excuse for that either.
So we use ours as a little bit of a savings fund. So those big, big items that we don't absolutely have to have right away but are nice to have. So... We went shopping this last weekend. We got a trampoline and a new TV.
Oh, nice.
And a lawnmower. A ride-on lawnmower. What did we get? We got a... actually, Best Buy had a sale last weekend. We got a 49-inch Toshiba. It retailed for $450, and we got it for $279.
Nice!
Yeah.
You said that was 4K?
No, it was not 4K.
Oh, I thought you said 4K. I'm sorry.
No. Yep.
Listen, wait. The amount of shit that provides 4K resolution is like zero.
Yeah. Even Blu-rays are not 4K.
Yeah. So, I mean, having 4K
Blu-rays
is ridiculous.
Can be, but they're not.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised you didn't go. You didn't go with the curved screen Samsung. What
no.
the hell?
But you know, the rotating bottom. Swear to God, there is a TV out there with a bottom that like pivots on the remote control. In case you're that lazy,
you would like a bottom. Never mind. Anyway,
hey-o.
No, it was one of those things. It got awesome reviews. It was. It's the biggest TV that we have now.
You can on the remote. You can hit it in the TV.
For everything that we want to do, 1080p is more than enough. It's an LED.
Oh, nice.
So it was a step up. Yep. Really thin. Our biggest TV, we've got the Vizio in the man cave. It's a 47. And it was my first flat screen TV. So it's now 10 years old.
Jesus.
That thing weighs a fucking ton.
Yeah, no kidding.
It takes two people to hang it on the wall. We had to buy a special mount to handle the weight for it.
Yep.
So we got this one. I carried it up the stairs one-handed. It's that one's a 47, this is 49. So it's 2 inches bigger diagonally.
Yep.
I carried it up the stairs single-handedly, unboxed it by myself, and kind of threw it up on the desk. It's awesome.
So you have your TV on a stand, not wall mounted, and for the primary.
At the moment, it is on a entertainment center. We haven't quite decided if we want to mount it yet or not. I have a mount for it, but it looks really good on the entertainment center, honestly. And sure. We're just kind of tossing up.
The height is good from the couch to the viewing area?
Yeah. Actually, the height is really good.
It's random. Nice.
I've been toying around with... I mean, I'm not toying around. I'm not toying around in the sense of I've done research, but I have tossed around the thought of looking into projectors.
Yes.
For a couple of reasons. A, doing like a movie night with like a decent like screen would be awesome. But yep. Also in the general area, because the climate's so nice down here, there are some of the cities that do like concerts or like movies in the park.
Yep.
Where somebody will come out with a projector and put a movie on for, you know, the local area free, just show up. And I thought, you know, it'd be cool to be able to host something like that and have that.
Sure.
But I know projectors can run a decent price. And so, I mean, again, it's something that would be cool to have, but I haven't put any sort of time and energy into looking into something I know that I can't afford right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. So, I know one of the YouTubers I follow back when he was younger, he lived in the attic. That was his last place. And it was, I don't know what we call peaked roof. Yep. So he really couldn't have like a decent TV in there. So he did get a projector, and then he projected on the opposite roof.
Yep.
And played nice. Games that way. So I was like, oh, that's actually a really awesome idea.
Yeah. The thing with projectors, nowadays they're all fairly similar in technology. What you pay for is brightness. And if you have a room that you can completely control the lighting of, for instance, in a basement with no windows.
Yep.
You can get a decent picture out of a projector for relatively inexpensive. If you're in an area with lots of windows, you cannot control the light, then you have to pay for more light, and it gets really expensive really quickly.
Yeah, so yeah. Just for an example, if you search projector, as simple as projector on Google, they always give you a list of shopping options.
Yep.
The first one is $309. aside from one kind of offshoot at $80, they go up from $300 to just the quick look here is almost $2,400. What? So
and,
just to give
and you're
an idea.
Nowhere, yeah, you're nowhere near topping it out.
Yeah.
The projectors, the digital projectors in theaters, which are really, really bright, even though they can control the lighting, it's, you know, you still need the light output for
yep.
the screen size that they throw. One of the big brand names for projectors there is Christie.
Yep.
I don't know if you've been in a theater with a Christie projector. They're really good. I liked them so much, I looked at getting one and then choked on the price. The projector body, you buy it separately from the lens. You have to buy a lens depending on what screen you want to throw.
Okay.
But just the projector body starts at $40,000.
Okay, so here's a Christie Rode 4K 45. It's a 4K DLP projector with no lens. It says in parentheses, no lens. Wade, throw out a price.
Let's see. No lens case projector, I want to say $300-$400. Yeah.
Okay, Brad? Christie, Rode, 4K yep. DLP projector.
I'd say about $30,000-$40,000.
$140,000.
There you go.
Wow.
45,000 lumens.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, you know.
It's fun technology, no doubt about it, but it gets expensive quick.
Yeah. Christie Digital Systems are in Cypress, California. I'm going to be there on Saturday. I mean, not at Christie Digital Systems, but I'll be in Cypress on Saturday. Anyway.
Big difference. Big difference.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be in the area code. Interesting enough. yeah, so we saw Zootopia too, so we'll talk about that when we get there.
We should probably get there pretty quick.
Yeah, I was going to say, Wade, do you have anything more to add here?
Nope, I'm just waiting for Zootopia.
Okay, awesome. All right, we'll jump to the movies now. We got a few to discuss. So coming out this week, we have four to talk about. One may be only worth your time, according to the critics. And that is 10 Cloverfield Lane. This is at 92%. Pretty impressive for the genre. PG-13 with Mary Elizabeth Winstead, John Goodman, and John Gallagher Jr. So a few names there. One second here. A
couple that I recognize.
Yeah, definitely. So a young woman wakes up after a terrible accident to find that she's locked in a cellar with a doomsday prepper who insists that he saved her life and that the world outside is uninhabitable following an apocalyptic catastrophe. I love that word, catastrophe. Uncertain of what to believe, the woman soon determines that she must escape at any cost. That is 10 Cloverfield Lane. Number two this week.
The previews for that one look right up Wade's alley.
Totally.
I have not seen these previews, actually, so I can't say.
Yeah, look up the previews on YouTube. They look like it looks like something you'd like.
And to be honest, the previews mirror the description, and that's all you get to know.
Yes.
Very good.
She wakes up in the cellar. This guy definitely is like... A little creepy. A little creepy, but he's got stuff to survive. You don't know if she's held captive or if she's held for her protection. And she starts wigging out.
She attempts to make her way out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about it.
And you hear a thump on the door, and that's where the preview ends.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Good suspense. Number two this week, The Brothers Grimsby. This is 49% rated R. This is with Sacha Baron Cohen, Mark Strong, Ela Fisher, Penelope Cruz, and Rebel Wilson. Nobby, a sweet but dim-witted English football hooligan, reunites with his long-lost brother Sebastian, a deadly MI6 agent, to prevent a massive global terror attack and prove that behind every great spy is an embarrassing sibling. Nobby has everything a man from Grimsby could want, including 11 children, and the most gorgeous girlfriend in the northeast of England, played by Rebel Wilson. There's only one thing missing, his little brother, Sebastian, who Nobby has spent 28 years searching for after they were separated as kids. Nobby sets off to reunite with Sebastian, unaware that not only is his brother an MI6 deadliest assassin, but he's just uncovered a plan for an imminent global terrorist attack. On the run and wrongfully accused, Sebastian realizes that if he is going to save the world, he'll need the help of the biggest idiot. So let me just tell you how I won't be going out to see that. I am not a Sacha Baron Cohen fan. I think he's kind of an idiot.
No.
He did a great job as King Julian in Madagascar, but then again, he was supposed to be an idiot. So I guess that works out. Number three this week, The Young Messiah. No critic rating. It is at PG-13, and this is the inspiring and unique story of a 7-year-old Jesus Christ and his family as they come to a fuller understanding of his divine nature and purpose. Short and sweet. I like it. Great. Moving on.
Let me guess. That one's not on the list either.
Not only hell no, but fucking hell no.
A resulting thumbs down from the critics.
Well, it wasn't a thumbs down. It was not rated from the critics, but a resulting thumbs down from me based on religious merit.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Number four, The Perfect Match. This is not currently have a critic rating. It is rated R with Terrence J. Corwilly, Cassie Ventura, and Donald Faison. Charlie is a playboy who's convinced that relationships are dead, even though his sister, a therapist, tries to tell him otherwise. His best friend set him up, bet him that if he sticks with one woman for 1 month, he's bound to fall in love. Charlie takes the bet because he believes that he's immune to love. That is, until he crossed paths with the beautiful and mysterious Eva. Turning on his irresistible charm, Charlie coaxes Eva into a casual affair, but soon finds out that Eva has turned the tables on him. Now Charlie is questioning what he may actually want more than just a one-night stand. So there you go. A little bit of a relationship sappy sort of love thing for the ladies. Because I said so. In okay. the box office, Zootopia, which we weren't able to talk about, has a critic rating of 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. So if you haven't gone to see it with your kids, see it. If you don't have kids, see it. If you have kids but they're otherwise occupied, go see it. That pulled in $75.1 million. London Has Fallen at a rating of 26%, pulled in $21.6 million. Deadpool holding strong, 84% at $16.7 million. And Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, 61% at $7.4 million. So, there you go.
Cool.
And all of us have seen Zootopia, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. I thought it was a funny movie.
Agreed.
There were some well-timed jokes.
Yes. I liked it very, very much. They did a wonderful job. The animation was great. The storyline was spectacular. I thought it did a good job of social commentary, honestly. The whole tolerance and diversity was really well woven in.
Yeah, they did a really good job of having that moral compass and guidance with the movie, that like you said, tolerance, not judging a book by its cover. Just because someone is classified as something doesn't mean that that's a perception of their care of their you know,
their inbreeding. It's not their classification. It doesn't just, how do I say this?
It's not falling into stereotypes, essentially, is really what the movie is talking about. Just because it looks a certain way, it doesn't mean that it is a certain way.
There
so.
You go. Yeah, perfect.
And sometimes you get help from unlikely places, and sometimes the people that are supposed to help you don't.
Correct. Little government conspiracy theory going on. We got social acceptance going on. We got a solid Breaking Bad reference that Brad had no idea of because he never watched any of that.
Got two of them. Yeah.
My wife picked it up, though. She caught on right away.
So did I, and I've barely watched the damn series.
I picked up on the atmosphere, and then Wade caught the name, so that was funny.
Yeah. You know what? I'm glad that they made it the sheep, though, because now we can make a Breaking Bad joke.
Oh God. You went there.
You jerk.
Oh, man. Podcast over.
We're done. Thanks. That's it for the podcast. There's no recovering from that. Oh, God.
I mean, I never put that together, but I think I
love
it.
Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ. All right.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah. That was something. It was a really good movie. Disney did a good job on this one. Definitely, take the kids. It's not a kiddie movie. There's a lot of, I don't want to say, there's not really adult humor, not really adult references, but it's not childish humor either. So it is very entertaining, and it's good for everybody.
Yes. There's, like a really good cartoon, I've always maintained, a really good cartoon will have material for different levels.
Yeah.
And I think this did that. You know, it was definitely entertaining for the little kids. There was more meat for the bigger kids, and there was definitely some material in there for the grown-ups as well.
Yep. I liked it overall.
That would be three thumbs up.
I wish that in the penitentiary scene, we would have had a Hannibal Lecter animal. I thought it was sorely missing that, because it was the right atmosphere for it. And they've used that in other movies, like the Cats versus Dogs movies. But I thought it could have been easily placed in there too, but they decided against it. So that's fine. I think that's it for movies. We haven't really seen anything else, right, Wade? I mean, aside from Deadpool, we've seen Zootopia, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, basically, go see them both. Well, one, don't take your kids to. The other one, you can take your kids to, but...
We'll let you be the judge.
Some of the stuff they won't get, and it'll probably be more of the jokes you will get if you're older.
There weren't really a whole lot of adult jokes in there. I mean, the Breaking Bad reference and the DMV thing, but that's about it.
They also, probably not one that people would normally get nowadays. I think it's the cheap one.
Okay.
If she counts herself.
Oh, yeah.
That was well-timed, you gotta admit.
Yeah, that was it pretty was. Good. Very good. All right, well, I think that does it for movies. We apologize for not being able to touch base on this one before it came out, but we're doing it now, so... Go see Zootopia if you haven't yet, and enjoy. And with that, we'll jump into news.
News.
With the news, it is that time of year. We touched on this a little earlier. It is tax time in the United States. One of the most loved agencies is the tax department, the Internal Revenue Service.
Oh, yeah, I love those people.
By loved, I mean love to be hated. So this story is kind of an amalgamation here, so we're going to rehash an old story. In May of 2015, the IRS announced that they had a data breach. Hackers had managed to get into their super ultra mega secure system on their website and were able to steal tax transcripts. At the time, they said it was about 100,000 people. In August, that number rose to 334,000. Latest count this year, they're now at 724,000 people affected. So a little bigger than they first thought. And the problem was in their retrieval system when you forget your password. So they have a system that lets you prove who you are based on information that supposedly only you know. And from there, they verify your identity and give you access. Well, the plot thickens. With 750,000 Americans' identities in jeopardy, they instituted a new program called Identity Protection Pins, where you were given a secret code sent to you by mail that only you knew. As long as you kept it safe, the IRS would not accept a tax return unless you put your PIN in.
I remember that from last year.
Yes. So the problem is, they decided that there needed to be a way to look these PINs up just in case you forgot what your PIN was. And they made the brilliant decision to protect it with the same knowledge-based protection that they protected the records with originally.
And someone just opens the door and goes, oh, what's this?
Oh, we know how to break this. We've done this before.
We already have the back door in place.
Yeah, appreciate you doing that, guys. So, pretty much the entire program is useless.
So
turns out it was the NSA. No.
Quite possibly. Yeah, so the IRS responded that it is... it has a number of precautions to monitor the traffic, and it will continue to closely monitor the PIN situation.
Good on you, I guess. I don't know.
You don't get rewarded for fixing a mistake you made.
Yeah.
Especially when it becomes someone's, or not even just someone's, multiple thousands of people's life that you screw up because you were too lazy.
Yeah. So, well done.
Stupid IRS.
All right. Wade?
Okay. Well, are any of you know what fair use is? Or the fair use law?
Yes, it's usually not what people think it is.
Well, why don't you go ahead and explain it?
Fair use is the... It's actually not law, but it is the concept.
The doctrine, that, yeah.
Yes, the doctrine, the concept, that you are able to use certain portions of somebody else's work as long as it falls into certain criteria, i.e. such as you're making a commentary on it, there is a classification for satire, you're allowed to make a satirical version of something that's protected. There's a few limited protected classes that allow you to use somebody else's work.
I think somewhere along the last two lines were like parody and critique.
Yes.
Well, in bringing that up, there was a hashtag, or what officially was a thunderclap, which was questioning YouTube and saying, where was the fair use? This has come from multiple different YouTubers bringing this thunderclap to its light. Now, if you don't know what a thunderclap is, it's a site you can go to. You create a, basically it's parameters for a system where people can sign up, and then it is then blasted for the people who sign up. It is put on their, all their social media, is put on their, you know, their Tumblr, their Facebook, Twitter, and whatever. And this one was for where is the fair use on YouTube. So people were pretty much asking YouTube, you know, where does the fair use, where when people, the creators of the content, can go around flagging and taking down videos at a moment's notice. And there were even the company that I have heard that was flagging videos, because on YouTube, if you can flag a video and the revenue that video receives for that particular day, or that particular time the flag was on, that money will go to you. Even though that, you know, eventually if they find that it was a false claim of copyright, you still get to hold on to the money. And there was a company that was using that loophole to siphon money from YouTubers.
So it was a company who was flagging videos saying it was their own content. They were getting the revenue during the period of time that YouTube investigated. When they found out that it was a wrongful claim, they weren't fined for the wrongful accusation.
There was also a big spiel with Universal, which was Universal, what's it called, Studios, were going around and, you know, copywriting things and or flagging things for copyright. Even though, if you do remember why Universal is actually down here in California, that's a kind of a big turnaround for them, because I think it's Nikola Tesla, I may be wrong with that, was actually holding on to most of the patents for the technology to use to make movies and TV shows. And so Universal moved to California, where the law wasn't really that restrictive at the time. And well, now we come around to this day and age where Universal is being Tesla and restricting people, even if it's the video that they produced is under the fair use doctrine. And so people have been going around asking, where does this fall? Where does the policy fall into the, what's it called, to the standards for YouTube?
This is a definite issue with YouTube's policies, with their business practices. the other side of it is, I can make as many claims now, I make sure I get this correct, I can make as many claims as I want to. You can only challenge, I think it's 3 at a time.
Yeah, and that you can have almost multiple claims.
So what's our ballpark? What's our video count out at now on YouTube, Garrett?
I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 200.
Okay. So if they're monetized, which ours are,
correct,
I could go in and flag all 200 videos as being infringing on my intellectual property. And because of the way YouTube's policy works, the fact that I have alleged that they infringe means that they would immediately act on that in my favor, just from me alleging it. They would act in my favor, and any monies that are earned during that period would come to me. And now you have to go through and challenge my assertion, but you can only do it three at a time. I can claim all 200 of them, but you can challenge three at a time.
Yeah, and you don't have to prove anything with your challenge. You just say, I challenge it. Correct. And I would I would have to prove that your accusation is invalid.
Yes.
That's a 30-day process. And so during that 30 days, the money that you would normally
collecting the check.
Yeah,
I understand that. What I'm pointing out is the flaw in the system of the person making the accusation, making the challenge, doesn't have to prove that they own the property. All they have to say is, "Hey, I own that," and they're using it without my permission. Whereas then the potential victim here has to actually prove that no, they don't own that. I do have rights to use this, or this is my creation. And so what I'm saying is it's one-sided on that point. Like you said, that YouTube sides with the accuser, not the accusee. So
correct.
And that's the shame.
And what I was stating is that since this process does take about 30 days, and actually the money goes to the accuser, and which is a flaw in its own, the money should go into, I think, what is essentially called escrow.
Yes. It should go into a holding,
Into a holding, and then, you know, it determines who won that particular, I want to say case. I don't know if that's the proper word. To go in to where to give that money, do it back to the person who made the thing, and it's fair use, or it's not fair use, and it goes to the actual creator of the original content. However, we did get a update from the YouTube policy team, and this is, he comes in and says, "Hi, I'm Spencer. I've been a member of the policy team since 2008, and throughout the time, I have seen your input help YouTube to get better. For example, when I started on YouTube policy, we didn't have appeal process for video removals. Although user feedback, we realized we need to establish a channel for users to alert us to our mistakes. We eventually launched an appeal for an age restrictions and just recently launched appeals for videos rejected due to policy violations. YouTube isn't perfect, but thanks to your feedback, we are learning quickly and get better." There is more to that. I'm just giving you the short note there. So, you know, it's nice that you're hearing, you know, what people are saying, because, well, in YouTube's case, it's the content creators which made this site big. And if you think, you know, my stick is normally gaming on this podcast, I've seen it happen multiple times where game companies have said, "Oh, you know, this person wasn't allowed to use our game," and critique it just because someone did a negative critique of that game. So this I've seen it happen.
Yeah, they'd give early access or a key to somebody for review. That person gives an honest review, and now that game developer publisher pretty much attacks that person's credibility by saying that the video they put up is now copyright infringement. Always get stuff in writing, people. If you're going to do a contract with somebody, get it in writing. That's all I'm saying.
If it's not in writing, it didn't happen.
That's correct. So the courts look at it.
But there's definitely some further changes that need to happen on YouTube's side. It has gotten better, but it needs to continue to change. There needs to be a penalty for falsely reporting.
Yep.
You know, like Wade said, the earnings from the video should go into escrow. If the claim is found to be wrong, the claimant should not be paid for making a false claim.
Yeah, I mean, you may penalize the person who might be using copyrighted material, but that should be reviewed before a payout goes one way or the other. It shouldn't be automatic.
Yes. Yep.
And I think the person who's accusing should have to prove that there's some degree of value to or validation to their accusation.
Mm-hmm.
Should not be a, oh, well, I own that, period, move on. No, I own it, I created it, or I did not give this permission rights or whatever. So, anyway, that's my two cents.
Yeah, and many, like I said, many YouTubers have risen and to speak about this thunderclap. It is unfortunately over. It ended the 4th of March. So, but I did link a lot of the YouTubers there, such as, you know, Total Biscuit, Boogie298, Mundane Matt, Sargon of Akkad, and many more. So if you're interested to see what these people are talking about, it'd be in much greater detail than what we can hear, go ahead and watch their videos. They should be all easy to find.
There we go. Well, good. Brad, we're at about 50-minute mark. If you got something that we can blow through,
I do.
Minimal time sink.
Yeah. So this one, you'll get a kick out of the wonderful fickleness of our government. September 18, 2013, Apple released a new version of iOS for their iPhones and iPads. One of the big features that was touted with iOS version 7 is that your device was going to be encrypted. Not only was it encrypted, but it would include a new feature that was mandated by your guys' great state of California.
That's right.
And that was that all iPhones sold in the state of California would have to contain a kill switch. Allowing the phone to be locked and disabled remotely. The idea behind this, clearly the phones nowadays are not cheap. You know, gone are the days of the $20, $30, $50 flip phones. Retail price on most smartphones nowadays is upwards of $700.
Yep.
Some of them even cross the $1,000 mark. So this is big for black market. Right. If I can steal your phone and wipe it, I can sell it for a couple hundred dollars really quick. So this is what this was trying to prevent. So September 18 rolls around. New software comes out incorporating this kill switch and also encrypting your device by default.
Nice.
Guess who loves this?
I can guess.
NSA.
Not the NSA, but the FBI.
Oh, that other three-letter word.
The FBI had a website advocating that you should definitely download this update. This was a good thing. We want to help you secure your devices. And the New York City Police Department was printing up flyers advertising Apple's latest update, advertising that it's free, that you should do it. One person even tweeted a picture of the flyer and commented that four uniformed NYPD officers were stopping people at the subway station asking them to upgrade their iPhones.
Jesus.
Okay, that's how much this was going to spare and has put a huge damper on the black market for smartphones. not just iPhones. Android had to do it as well.
Yep.
Android is a little more ambiguous on the encryption side, but has to have the kill switch. Fast forward to our current debate of Apple versus the FBI. Now the FBI all of a sudden doesn't like this. They're forgetting that they told you to do it. In fact, they're going so far as to forget that they quietly removed the page from their website that was advocating it.
Of course they were.
And the journalist that caught this sent in a Freedom of Information request to the FBI requesting comment on this. Now, the Freedom of Information Act states that they are supposed to respond to you in some manner within 20 days of the request. And in unusual circumstances, they are allowed to respond that, you know, due to workload or whatever the reason, we're not able to reply within the standard 20 days. But such notice shall specify a date that would result in an extension for more than... Sorry, no such notice shall specify a date that would result in an extension for more than 10 working days. So they've got 20 days to let you know, either answer your question or tell you it's going to take them another 10.
Yes.
They've got a total of 30 days. So he submitted the Freedom of Information request. 167 days later, they responded to let him know that it was going to take about another 300 days.
In which case, a lawsuit was established on the violation of the Freedom of Information Act.
Well, you know, having,
holy crap.
Having free access to presses is kind of a wonderful thing. So he published it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Fucking government, man.
Yeah.
Hey, we have rules, but we're going to choose not to follow them in any given point in time that we deem necessary.
We have rules that only you should follow.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes, exactly. So, not only are they breaking their own rules, not only are they breaking the Freedom of Information law, hello guys, it's a law, they're also backpedaling as is convenient for them. When phone theft was a huge issue, they were all in favor of everybody encrypting everything because that's what's best.
When someone died so someone could steal an iPhone. Yeah, that's brilliant.
Now that that's inconvenient for them, they are advocating weakening the safety and security of the entire nation so that they can get into three phones. It's more than three. I'm exaggerating. I understand that.
Sure. But
the point is, they have a small backlog of phones that they have not been able to get into, and they're crying about it now. And they are prepared to sacrifice everybody's security and safety to get into these feet. Not cool, guys.
Not Here's cool. the thing, though.
Oh,
I don't think
they
give a shit.
Say that again?
I don't think they give a shit.
About?
About what impact their decisions make on long-term situations.
Of course
situations.
They don't.
As is evident.
Well, the only shit they give is getting more access and more power.
Yeah.
Because awesome. At the end of the day, that's what this is about.
Of course.
The government.
In Apple challenging the demand to de-encrypt that California shooting.
Yep.
iPhone.
San Bernardino shooting. Yeah.
The San Bernardino shooting. It's come out that Apple had already appointed somebody to assist them, that they had advised them, you know, hey, just hold off. The next time the phone does a backup, you can pull the backup. The FBI decided it would be smart to try and force the password and had already scrambled the phone.
After so many tries, it auto-bricked itself.
Yes, yes. So this whole thing with them trying to force their way into the San Bernardino iPhone has nothing to do with that iPhone. They've already screwed that one up.
They just want access into everyone else's phone to make sure it doesn't happen again. At least that's what they say. They're like, yo, we're government. We're Big Brother. We're always watching.
The point is to set a precedent. And that's why Apple's fighting.
Awesome.
Go Apple.
Right?
That's one of the times where it's like, all right, yeah.
Yeah, whether you like them or not, you could be a diehard Android fan, and I don't care. This is one time you should root for Apple.
Yeah, I'll root for Apple, but I would still say that, like, in their phone, from a consumer perspective, that I think someone from Apple should get an Android and just go through it, because there's a lot of things that they could learn. But that's a whole nother topic for a whole nother episode.
Yeah, we're going to leave that one alone before this turns into a 3-hour conversation on why Apple is Apple. So, all right. With that, we thank you once again for listening. We do apologize for the delay. We do ask you to hit us up on Twitter or Facebook. Twitter at AbundanceKnot, Facebook.com/Abundance.Knot. We are on YouTube, although a little dry lately. I've got many much Rust footage to compile and post. But we look forward to hearing from you. So reach out, say hey, and we will talk to you next time.
Yeah, I did get a video up recently. I know it's few and far between. I really need to get back on that. And I keep saying that, and I keep on having, you know, free time.
Get
but
on
I keep,
it.
Yeah, I need like a whip, a taskmaster behind me, apparently. But I will try to get better. You know, I'm working on it right now. But anyways, keep on gaming.
That's a wrap.